Hello, everybody. It's Eddie. We are glad you're with us today. Got Mr. Matt with us.
Hello, hello.
Matt's got a little snow on the ground.
Just a little bit. What do you think?
Not much.
Yeah.
Not much. That's going to be shoveling a little snow.
I've already shoveled some. That's the problem. And it's that's after shoveling.
I just got back from D.C. and Baltimore and Delaware. And I was telling them that it actually started getting warmer. When we first got over there, it was actually cold, but it started getting warmer. And there was... I mean, they had all the snow piled up, you know, that they've gotten off the road and piled up on the mediums and stuff. And I mean, literally like 15 feet high, just ice blocks. Crazy. That was where I was supposed to be crossing the street, by the way, is where those ice blocks were. So, got Mr. Mangan with us? Don't we?
Y'all hear me?
We can, Charles, but you're real, you're not very loud.
Okay, what about now?
It's getting better.
Cool.
All right. He's adjusting his mic. All right, Mr. Matt, let's roll with it.
All righty. All right, first up. Let's see, I think it's Christy that's on the phone, so let me find her real quick. Well, I'm trying to unmute her, and it's not working. It's interesting. Let me see if maybe Sharon made it on. No.
All right.
For some reason, it's not letting me unmute her for some reason. So I don't know if maybe there's a mic issue.
Really?
Yeah. So.
But
anyway.
You want me to try?
Yeah, you can try it. Maybe.
And where is she on the list?
It's just put in the name KRISTI. Says she's on her phone. Right, let me look a little different here.
You know? It won't let me unmute her. Christy, I don't know what we got here, girl.
She said she's on her phone or something, but I'm not seeing her on the...
Yeah, I found her on the list, but, hold on then.
Muted.
Did you mute everybody, Matt? Matt?
Somebody just muted me, so I don't know. That may have been you. I'm looking. She said she's on her phone, but I'm not finding a telephone number, so... Christy, if you can just kind of type in any questions or anything, or see if you can get your.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll just go ahead and read, and then we can kind of go from there. She said that they purchased a non-performer in Lansing back in August, and took and got everything transferred, and our BPO said it was occupied after the purchase and discovered it was actually abandoned. Their servicer located the bar, and they basically terminated the land contract. So basically, they have an REO now. So the numbers on that are 23 non and repaired, and 18 non as is. Comps are mid 40s in the area, And you've got some online statistics of what the value of the properties are, and it rents for about $750. The taxes were brought up to date with the exception of the winter, which is now due. So with the purchase of it and the trash out and the bringing up to date, they were all in about $19,000. So by the time they got the trash out finished, which gave evidence that there were squatters, it was around the holiday and things weren't going too fast. The REO gave an initial, the REO person gave an estimate of just over $11,000. It only includes basic repairs, no carpet paint, etc. And they were getting an additional basic rehab estimate to get it rent ready, which came in the last, and they were a little bit high. One was $45,000, for instance, $650 for a toilet and seat. The other was $51,000. That basically gave everything all in. Their initial plan was to modify, but with the bar gone, they decided they were going to clean it up and rent it out. But with that amount in it, I'm guessing it's the same old. That's a little bit higher than what they're expecting. And what's a better way of working this out now?
Oh, I really wish we could get her on the phone with us, Matt.
Yeah.
Let's see if we, that button down there says mute all. If we do that, then it unmutes everybody, and then we got to go work our way through. Is that what happens?
No, if you mute everybody, everyone gets muted, which includes you, me, and Charles. But that's already happened, and I don't think that, I said, I think she called in. So actually, Christy, if you called in or if you haven't called in, do that, and we'll should be able to pull you up on the phone as well. But
yeah, I did a call from a cell phone last week, didn't I?
You did. So actually, I see your hand raised, but that's up. Oh, there we go. Hey, you have yourself muted, so if you can unmute yourself, Christy. There you go.
Christy.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I was trying to listen on my or watch on my tablet and talk on the phone, and that just apparently wasn't working.
Oh,
you did a great job of summarizing this.
Yeah.
We're kind of not knowing what to do with it.
All right. So, Charles, I'm gonna let you weigh in on this. This is Christy, as you know, this is a common thing that, you know, that people go give an estimate to rehab a house, and it's, you know, they're killing an ant with an elephant gun, so to speak.
Right? Yeah, I was thinking it was kind of high. I'm like, okay.
Christy, you know this, right? That
yes.
BPO ain't nothing but a property inspection to me, right?
Yes.
What they say that the house is worth in the BPO and it rents for $750 a month in a solid neighborhood, what that realtor says is worth is not what you should be doing.
Well, I had, in just from listening to calls and things like that, I was thinking, you know, that if we could sell it as a fully loaded rental and just sell it outright, because we're kind of on the new end, we needed a little cash, that we could probably get 65 or 70 from it, and that was my kind of my guesstimate to that. But it needs so much work that I don't know that that's a viable route for us right now.
All right, so Charles, I'm going to let you kind of weigh in about the repairs.
Okay.
Because this is the art form of the business.
So you got retail bids, Christy, and they do look pretty high, especially if you got a toilet seat and commode for $650.
I can put it in a lot cheaper than that, but that's a long ways from home.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely is. Let's see. Do you have pictures of this, Christy, by chance? Matt, do we have pictures by chance of this house?
Sharon sent them, I think. I'm not sure what she – I don't know what she sent. That wasn't it.
So you've gotten two bids so far, right? You got one for $45,000, one at $51,000.
Yes, and we went through the company that we're using, and I was thinking that since they were, you know, more of a vendor, that they would give us a little better – they would have a little better resources for the bids. So that's a – it's a lovely two-story house in Lansing, Michigan.
Okay.
I think some of the shrubbery has been cut down. And once we finally got inside, figured out that the reason there were 20 pizza boxes in it was because somebody was squatting in it.
Okay. Let's look at this BPO here real quick. And again, you know, we look at BPOs as just, we don't always give a lot.
Yeah, and it's just kind of a go by the starting point, and yeah.
Yeah, that's our bottom starting point generally. So what would this rent for, Christy?
$750.
Okay.
And we got it. Besides this source, all the other rent facts and all those came up with about the same. So average about that.
Okay.
And I'm sure all these comps are probably cash sales or like REO properties.
Yeah.
So that's really going to drive the market down. That's really going to drive the market down. I mean, I do see one there's listed that sold for 20, it's listed for 40. If somebody came in here and offered seller financing on that, they're going to get a lot more than 20 for that house. I still think, did your realtor get these bids for you?
We went through NDS. I don't, okay. This is the VPO that came with the package. And so this was done right prior to us, within reason of us purchasing. And so we didn't get a new one.
Okay. Now then, let me ask you this. Have y'all tried NDS on this one here?
That's who we're working with. And they're the ones that provided these bids. We asked for 2 to 3 bids, and that's what they sent us back, and they're really high.
I'm sorry. I said NDS, correct? I meant NAA.
No.
Do you have any interior pictures? Because what I'm trying to look at, Christy, I mean, it looks like it's got to have a roof, but, you know, they're telling us you got to have new cabinets. Are the cabinets gone in the house? I mean, there's something.
They're pretty beat up. They're pretty beat up. I'm not sure when the folks moved out, but it was probably, my guess is it's been vacant over a year. And okay. So these other people were just camped out. And so when we finally did get some photos from the trash out people, the kitchen was pretty beat up. And so I get that, you know, to put in new cabinets. It's not a big kitchen. It's an old house. And so it's not like it's going to take a lot. And there's only one bathroom, and it needed a little work. But, I mean, it's a rehab. It's not that terrible.
Well, no. Okay. I mean, the bids sound pretty high to me. And, I mean, I've gutted a house and redid the entire house, cabinets, every bathrooms, everything for less than $25,000.
Well, that's more in the range that we were thinking.
And that's just recent. So it's not like I did that 20 years ago. I mean, this is just recently. Those bids are extremely high. Of course, again, they're retail bids. And, you know, sometimes you may have to, and I realize that, you know, you're not close to the property. But sometimes you may have to go back, and I mean, the realtors may have a contractor that you can use. Have you asked a realtor about a contractor that they recommend in the area?
I haven't.
That on occasion. I've gone through there, and I've actually got names from my realtor or contacted a realtor to get a name and use their contractor.
Okay.
And I've gotten more reasonable bids there too, and not always. I'm not going to say it's always the case.
Yeah, I tell you, in my mind, I think I would at least make contact with National Asset Advisors.
Okay.
And they have, part of what they do, and they charge for it, but it's worth it, is they have an advisory level, and I think you just need to lay it out. You know, here's my bids. You know, here's the vendor. They know each other. Charles and I are going to be in a meeting with all of them next Monday in Kansas City. We have a weekly meeting with these guys. We were on with them this week. But I want you to just send it out to them and say, look, you know, we need a seller finance strategy that's not trying to go, it's got to be in the budget. You may end up owner financing to a consumer who isn't going to make you do as much repairs. You need a house where it's got an insurable roof, okay?
Okay.
You need to make sure the house has, you know, certain standards. But cosmetic stuff, you know, you sell it to somebody and you know, that may be part of their deal. So you're correct. I mean, we're, you know, our reaction is the same as yours. But, and I know you're saying, well, okay, I get this too much. What do I do about it? So I think if it were Charles and I, we'd probably reach out to them, lay it out, you know, lay out a memo, you know, lay it out clearly, okay? Because even if you go call Lana over there, she didn't have the level of experience that another employee does, or another, you know, somebody more of a thinker, you know, an executive role.
Okay.
So do that, and then offline, I want you to let us know, because we're working with these guys behind the scenes, both parties, a lot. And when something is just not reasonable, we got to know about it. The company didn't do anything wrong. They hired a contractor. Just the contractor's just, you know, they're overkilling it. But we are trying to get feedback on it. So I would let National Asset Advisors take a look at it, see what they think they can do. I mean, once again, you know, it's to go take it into a repaired condition. You're going to need obviously a lot different bid.
Yes.
But you may sell it as is and not pour so much money into it. A 50-50 doesn't always work, because sometimes you need the consumer that's going to buy it from you via seller financing to let them do a lot of the work. You know, they may be in the contracting business. A lot of times they are.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
But let Charles know where it's at with it. We are working with all of these guys on a very regular basis, and so we're just, anytime we see something that pops its head up like this, we want to see about it. We're not saying every student with every asset to send us stuff. That's not the message. We're just saying we get it. This is, you need a more practical solution.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
All righty. Well, I'm in D.C. today, and it's a lot warmer here today. I don't know. I think I brought the warm weather with me when I came.
I left Baltimore yesterday, and we weren't even wearing a coat, so it did warm up. So
it was nice.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I'm like, you know, it was 75 in Dallas on Sunday. I'm like, I don't want to go. It's cold up there. I'm a sissy.
it's the weather's pretty up there this week, I think. All right, Miss Christie.
Thank you. All righty.
All right.
So, Charles, I want to just kind of talk about this just a little bit.
Okay.
So, just to make sure that the mentor students understand that we saw this as a gap in your business, and just because we're addressing it doesn't mean that, you know, we think it's all totally resolved yet. We get totally what Christy's saying, and we are working with these guys, you know, to come up with solutions. So I think she did the right thing by kind of putting it up there, and we're pushing her back out to go talk to NAA, because definitely, you know, they have an advisory role where they can help people with some common sense solutions. But so, you know,
they're more experienced in that space too, Eddie. So, I mean,
they are.
You know, NDS is a vendor network. They're a great organization. But NAA, they're familiar with this type of these properties. They know the seller finance product. They know this product. And, I mean, this is really what their niche is.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right, Mr. Matt, what's next?
All right. So I think we're caught up on the questions. I guess you might want to check the board if you haven't, but I'll go ahead and.
Oh, I haven't. We're blowing up with questions.
Well, just There's a couple. There was one person who has an actual agent, contractor in that area, and sold one about two blocks away from that one property. So.
All right. There's a good idea, Christy. You can pick that up.
So I'll have him send over his contact, and I can send it to her if he.
That's my friend Bob, Christy, and I can tell you he's a great dude. So he's a. I would consider his recommendation as a good start.
All right. Ray, you are up next.
Okay. Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Doing great.
So... My story is I've been looking at some foreclosed property in California, and they do exist. And I was looking at this one property. It was foreclosed at the courthouse steps at 149.
Okay.
The after repair value from my research is I think anywhere between 190 and 230.
Okay.
And so my problem, I guess, not really a problem, I guess my question is, there's no way to look inside the property. I guess they have some people there who foreclosed, and I guess the lender is not going to deliver the property vacant. They're just letting the buyer assume that responsibility. So the initial question is, what are, I guess, if the lender is not willing to do it, what am I getting myself into? I guess is my initial question.
Well, you're buying a property as is where it is, because you're not going to be able to see the inside condition of that property. The outside of it looking pretty good condition.
Yeah, the outside looks pretty good. Exterior looks fine. The area is good too.
So you're going to have to evict these people out of the house or offer them a cash for keys offer. If you buy this asset, then you are the owner. So you can contact them and offer them cash for keys or have your servicer contact them. But being an REO, you can contact them and offer them cash for keys to see if that would work. if not, you're going to have to go through the eviction process. So... I mean, that's, it's pretty much your choices. I mean, you're buying an asset. You said it's been on the auction at 126 and there's been no bids, correct?
No bids at all. Yeah. That's what kind of perked my interest. It doesn't seem like something that people are interested in.
Right.
And I'm kind of looking to see if I can swoop in and, offer something that would.
If the bank just foreclosed on this property, I wouldn't be too concerned that it was a bankruptcy either, because the bank wouldn't have foreclosed on it had they been in Chapter 13, because there would have been protected under the Chapter 13 bankruptcy.
Well, let me clarify that, okay? The bank would have foreclosed if they're in Chapter 13 bankruptcy. They just would have had to have gotten a lift of stay.
Exactly.
So that means that you're past that threshold.
Okay.
So that really doesn't need to be a big concern of yours, because the foreclosure has been completed. So like Eddie said, if there was a bankruptcy, then they would have had to obtain a lift to stay in order to foreclose the property. So
you have every reason to believe, Ray, that it is occupied.
Yes.
Do you have any
my sense of
believe that it's like completely trashed?
Let me ask
Do
you
I have any? Sorry, I didn't miss the question.
I was going to ask you this. What do you think? Why do you think there's no bids on this?
I'm thinking it's because people can't see the inside of it.
And it very well could be. Didn't you say there's a bid deadline? Didn't I see here where there was a bid deadline that you may see some?
Yeah, I think it's within a day. I think tomorrow. I think the auction ends. And I was just gonna. I mean, my initial thinking was put in a token bid at 126. And see if it sticks.
Okay. And who did your ARV?
Yeah, after repair value is, I think, based on what I what I we looked at in the market. It seems like high end probably 230, low end probably 190.
Okay, and that's based based on the comps there.
Yeah, based on the comps that I've been able to do research wise. Yeah, I mean it the area rents for $1,150 a month.
Okay.
So not the rent's not too bad.
Okay. Yeah, right. I mean,
I'm going to cover a couple of things here on the board, a couple of good thoughts here. Charles, by the way, if you can adjust your mic, I do know it's a little bit low, and I know you got a new mic, so maybe get the volume to kind of go up a little bit on it.
All right, hold on just a minute, Eddie.
The one thing that the Winberry suggested is a good idea, just because it does seem cheap for California, and that is to make absolutely sure it is a first and not a second.
Okay. I mean this is an REO property. I mean this is basically a lender sale.
Loan's gone. This is a straight up.
It's already foreclosed. Yeah, this is a foreclosed.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you just want to make sure there's no underlying lien on it. Right.
Not the foreclosure process. The foreclosure process wouldn't clear those out.
Foreclosed on the second. Now they have a property for sale subject to the first.
Got it.
See what I'm saying? You still need a title search, right?
Sorry.
You still need you're still going to want a title policy on this thing, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you just bid subject to no, and you got to make sure that there's no underlying. What about taxes?
Yeah, that's the other question I had there. Lower is property tax one of those things that get cleared up in foreclosure sale?
Okay. I know you find this hard to believe, but there's some people in disbelief here on the panel that this could be a decent house in California. Okay. I know you find that hard to believe.
No, not at all. I mean, I think the price points is probably going to be surprising for most.
Let me tell y'all, I happen to know my friend Ray, and he has common sense, so I'm going to assume that he's figured this part out. It's a great question. It's a fair question, but he's past that. Ray, we take a swing at stuff all the time with Heron, okay?
Okay.
Trustee Corp is probably who I would call. In California.
Who are they?
It is a foreclosure management service, and he's done a lot of work for people that we know. I don't think the attorney that owns all this is named Randy. I don't think you're going to talk to Randy himself, but it's called Trustee Corp.
Okay.
And they're solid, and they know what they're doing. They've done a lot of legal, they do foreclosure work in about 15 states, but it's all Western states, which we don't have a huge amount of assets in. But a lot of my friends that have been in the seconds business have used these guys a lot, and I think as far as what the eviction process looks like,
right.
I don't think Charles. I mean, from your and I's perspective, it sounds like something you'd take a swing at, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, as long as you're sure about the neighborhood and the area and you're comfortable with that, and apparently you are, you said there's not a blighted properties, it's not a crime area. I would confirm the delinquent property taxes just to make sure, you know, you're not sitting upside down with $20,000 in property taxes. But, you know, it's bank may or may not have paid those taxes, so I would confirm that. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's worth taking a swing, and I think you're probably – I'd be curious just to see tomorrow before the bid deadline if people come in and start bidding on the property. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I've put properties in auctions before, and especially these online auctions, and generally the day of the deadline is when I'd start seeing some bids come through. So I'd be interested to see if you get some bids tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. No, I definitely plan on looking.
Ray, I'm going to tell you this. It shocks us because generally people are paying too much, and generally they're not asking all these tough questions like you are. And so it may be one of those things where they light up the boards at 3 hours before the auction closes and the thing brings $180,000.
Right, right.
It would not blow Charles and I's mind if you said that.
Yeah.
You've kind of left off where it is, and I don't want to ask you anything inappropriate. So, you know, I mean, I've had several students.
It's Stockton, California.
Okay.
Stockton, California.
Okay. So we have a lot of active REO people, real estate investors, as you well know, in California, and so some of them had asked that.
Okay.
Listen, as sure as you buy it, you're going to find out it's got a nuclear waste dump in it, okay? But Charles and I have taken a lot bigger swing than this a lot in our life. There's nothing you're telling us that goes, oh, my God, no way.
Okay.
If you're going to buy it, if you're going to bid on it, I don't know if you can bid on it subject to the taxes. I think you can probably bid on it subject to, you know, a title policy.
And, okay.
And so you want to make sure there's no underlying debt. Taxes, you know, you're going to take a wild swing when you call the tax office and see if they're current. Because
right.
If they sold to taxes, then they may on their books show it being current. Charles, do you know about that particular area? What most likely? Can you call the tax office and get a good sense of the tax paid?
He should be able to call the tax office and find out from the tax office if there's delinquent taxes on that property.
Okay.
And that's a big factor because there could be some taxes that have accumulated on there. And that may be part of it. I mean, they didn't disclose that on the auction side, I don't guess.
No.
And so they're relying on you to do that with your due diligence. So, you know, that's a critical part of your due diligence is verifying those taxes. So I'd definitely try to contact the tax office.
Okay, sounds good.
Can I assume that you've done your normal due diligence on crime and all that?
Yes.
Stuff, right?
I mean, yes.
It looks like a property you absolutely can live with.
Yes. I even drove by the area myself, so.
Cool.
That's the nice thing about having something local.
No. You're taking a risk, but it's certainly, from what we hear right now, it's certainly a risk that we've taken many times worked out.
Okay. Awesome, guys.
Cool. All right, Mr. Matt.
Okie dokie. So, Roman. Okay, Roman's next. Roman, you have yourself muted. If you'll unmute yourself, you are good to go.
Roman wants you to talk to Myla.
Yeah, okay. Myla.
Okay.
Myla?
Hello.
How are you?
Okay, can you hear me now? What's something going on with my mic?
No worries. We can hear you, Myla. How are you?
Okay. Doing great.
All right. What you got? Tell us your story a little bit here.
Yeah, it's pretty much everything on the paper. In the short story, we just received our first REO through foreclosure, which we just gone through in Litchfield, Minnesota.
Right.
And the servicing company, first of all, after we went through foreclosure, they asked us if do we want to transfer services back to our office because FCI, who is our servicer, can't close our file until redemption expires. If we want to keep it open with them, so basically with them 6 months. They can close, or do we want to transfer? So at this point, we kind of don't understand what should be done properly and what should be our next step, since this is our first area, if you please a little bit explain the procedure. And also a couple more questions regarding PKM and REO's.
All right. Owner. Well, to your good fortune, you have a gentleman on this training with you today that has done this about 100,000 times. And it ain't me.
So basically what FCI is saying is that...
I know this is not... Just to make sure there's no lack of communication, quickly explain, if you will, redemption rights and workarounds with redemption rights, and I think that'll lead to more of drawing the conclusion of the advice you're going to give them.
Right. So basically, in certain states, there are redemption periods on a foreclosure, and once that property goes through a foreclosure, unless that borrower waives that redemption right, that redemption period is in effect until the end of its expiration time. So you have no idea if this property is even occupied, correct?
We assumed it is occupied.
Okay. So basically there's not anything you can do with this property if it is occupied. The first thing I would do is I would give an occupancy check just to confirm it. If it's occupied. I mean, if it is occupied, that borrower has the right to that property and to redeem that property. That's the purpose of it, is that they can come back and redeem that property within that six-month time frame, unless they've waived their redemption right, which in this case, I'm assuming they did not, because the attorney didn't. Apparently, nobody reached out and talked to them. I don't know if there was contact with them. But again, in Minnesota, that borrower has the right to redeem that property within the six-month period, okay?
So basically what you're saying, they have a right to stay in this property and do whatever, living or, I don't know, destroying the property within 6 months. It's up
correct.
To them.
Correct. Now then, you could talk to the attorney and see if they talk to the borrower about signing a waiver of the redemption rights. You could go in there and have the attorney offer them, you know, $1,000 to sign a waiver to see if they would do that. And that would probably be my first contact with FCI. Was it their attorney that foreclosed on this for you?
Yes.
Okay. So I would ask FCI, did their attorney ask to see, could we make an offer to have them sign a waiver of redemption? You know, I guess my first step on this in this case would be I'd get it inspected. I'd have a drive-by inspection, an occupancy check inspection done on this property to confirm that it is in fact occupied. Because here's what you don't want to do is you don't want to, you know, mess around with the attorney, try to get them to contact the borrower, and the borrower's not even in there, because that attorney's going to invoice you for that. Second off, if it's vacant, you have the right to secure that house and go in there and winterize it. So that's the one thing you want to do. If it was vacant, and don't think that necessarily it's occupied just because there's a redemption period. I've got one right now that I'm sitting on, and it's in Michigan, and I can't do anything with it for 6 months because we didn't get a waiver of redemption rights. The borrower didn't contact with, they wouldn't ever make contact with the attorneys, and it's vacant. The property was vacant when I went out and had it inspected. So I got it secured, I got it winterized, got the grass cut, and so I've done maintenance on the property, but I can't technically sell the house until my redemption period expires.
Well, you could get a Hardeman's bond and sell it.
In some states you can, and I asked that question to the attorney because this was one I wanted to try to do this with, and they told me that they wouldn't allow that in Michigan. And
what about
states,
Minnesota?
You're right, in some states you can.
Okay, let me explain to you what a Hardeman's bond is. Okay, a Hardeman's bond is where there could be a myriad of things on the title that you can't take off of the title, but you pay them, the bonding company, a fee, and you still do it. Now, my question is, Charles, you know, we've done this a zillion times, and I'm not saying you can in Minnesota, but, like, what stops her from progressing with the eviction process?
And again, I don't think Minnesota law is going to allow you to, because they actually have a right to that property for during that redemption period. It's just like if that property was vacant and you leased it out for 6 months, if that borrower comes back within that 6 month period and that property was leased out, you're collecting rents. They can technically say you owe that rent to the borrower because that was their right. That was still their property. They technically have ownership of that property. Although the title is in your name through the foreclosure, that's the purpose of the redemption, giving them 6 months to come back and redeem that property. Unless
All right.
there is a waiver.
I'm going to go in a different direction here. Okay? I want you to reach out to Pro Title. Okay?
Okay.
And I want you to go through this, and I want you to get, I want them to kind of evaluate the situation and see if there is a shortcut. I think there is. Okay, but I don't want to say it because I don't want to be wrong, and Charles has a lot of experience with it. I know that, well, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I have found out when I asked four attorneys an opinion, I get six answers. So, you know, I don't, to be perfectly honest with you, the attorney that did the foreclosure work for you, I don't know that I have a lot of confidence in them. I'm going to tell you why. In this regard, I'm not saying that they don't have a law degree. I'm not saying they don't know how to foreclose. But that's going to be an attorney that does national foreclosure work. So they're going to do work for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all that kind of stuff, right? They're a gin mill law shop. And I just haven't had great experience with them giving me innovative solutions. And we're not telling you not to go follow the law, okay? I'm not telling you to go send some guy out there with a sledgehammer and beat the door down. We're definitely not telling you not to follow the law. But if you're like looking at a servicers in that capacity who has a national contract with a foreclosure service, when you get down to stuff like this, my life experience is they don't generally come up with good solutions. And there may not be a good solution, but if there is, I don't expect them to come up with it. Okay, and that's not criticizing the servicer or anything. I'm not doing that at all. I'm just saying to you that I know that they use a national foreclosure management company. So I would get a hold of Pro Title and say, what the heck can I do? And I'm going to bet you that if there's a more practical solution, they're going to be able to help you figure it out.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Then another part of the question I have.
All right. Let's go on with it.
It's about insurance on the property. We don't know if it has insurance. Probably doesn't before it was under the blanket of FCI. Because before foreclosure, now it's foreclosed. And it's REO, and we don't have insurance. So if something happened with the house, we can lose all these investments, all the money, and everything. Mm. How we can protect ourselves? What kind of insurance? Because I tried to call a couple of insurance company, and since this is even, we don't know if it's owner-occupied or if it's vacant, basically we're not there. They said they can't insured it. So what's your suggestion, what's your recommendation, or how you can guide us in this situation?
So do you have forced place insurance on it now at all?
No, because it was through FCI till we become an owner of this property. The way we understand it so far, we don't have nothing at this point after foreclosure.
Here's the short answer. Okay, I don't know whether FCI kept the coverage on it or not, but you are totally correct. And calling State Farm or Allstate is worthless. okay? You can call the same kind of companies that insure real estate investors, like Affinity Group, can do this. But they insure houses. You're not insuring the note anymore because you've already foreclosed. So it's easier to find a company because they'll cover vacant property insurance. Okay. What about David Roberts' situation, Charles? Is he ready to roll with his or?
I'm sorry. Do what, Eddie?
What about David Roberts' company? Are they ready to roll out with this program or is it in place or?
It's not in place, but it will be. It should be here by the end of the week. So we will have a new provider, but I'm not telling you to wait a week. This is something you definitely want to get covered.
Just call Affinity Insurance Group. They're in Kansas City. Charles and I are going to be in their office next Monday. Affinity Insurance Group. They're in Kansas City. They insure houses like this all across the United States.
Okay.
Did FCI tell you that insurance was canceled because it was REO? Did they tell you this?
No, they didn't tell us, but I had a conversation during the Note Expo with one of the CEO guys from that company, and I asked this question, and the answer was that we are covered till the FCI hold a servicing on the note.
Well, technically, they're still servicing the note.
Yeah. Okay. Charles, if you had this asset, would you have them continue to service it?
Well, no, not without a doubt.
Okay, you get my answer? We can't tell you what to do. We can tell you if it was an asset under Charles's management, we would cancel the servicing. You're just going to have to pay them a fee for something you'd rather not have to do.
Yeah, there's not anything else that they're going to do at this point. I mean, their servicing is pretty much over. It's in foreclosure. It's not an REO. They don't resell the REOs for you. You could take the REO and you could move it to NAA if that's what you wanted to do. And you know, if you're going to work through NAA, then I mean, they've got an insurance group that insures the REOs as well. So are you planning on just taking the REO back and just marketing it yourself?
Probably. That was our exit strategy, one of the exit strategy to resell to wholesale investor.
Okay.
If not.
I mean, you could do that, you know, and again, if that's not going to work for you, again, NAA, if, you know, you could board this asset with NAA. They can go out there and they handle it. I mean, they'll go out there and secure it. You know, they'll go out there and winterize it. They'll make sure the asset's preserved. And then they can go out there and seller finance it for you if that's what you want.
Yeah. So let me give you two specific solutions here. Okay. The first one is, but specifically on the eviction holdup and the the issue with I just lost the word. What am I looking for, Charles? Their buyback period.
The buyback, the redemption.
The redemption. I'm sorry.
I actually
didn't know this stuff, but I wasn't anywhere in the sights on that one. Then I would talk to ProTitle. I think NAA can also do it. And, you know, Affinity Insurance Groups, somebody was kind enough to put their information up there. So make sure that you don't find out the property's uninsured to cancel it. But I think there's some chance that you can progress on and at least progress on with an eviction process without. Now, I'm not guaranteeing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you can. At this stage.
Okay, Eddie, what you're saying, and Charles, what I understand from my main question, the first one was regarding moving the file from FCI. They ask us if we want to transfer service back to my office or keep it with FCI. Make sure, you would recommend.
Make sure you got the insurance problem solved.
Before anything.
Charles's answer is, if this was an asset under our management, he would discontinue their servicing. Okay?
I mean, yeah. There's just not a service they provide at this point. You own the asset. There's nothing else they're going to do. So there's no sense in continuing to pay them a service.
I think you need a more aggressive, specialized response than the attorney that handled the foreclosure for you's response. Okay? So I'm giving you two solutions. The first is Pro Title.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is National Asset Advisors, both of which are going to have attorneys and solutions that are going to not be the old, I do, you know, gin mill foreclosure work for Fannie Mae answer. That's what we would do.
Okay.
All right.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, hold on. I missed one question. The big question about 1099C. Yes, that part. Could you answer it, please? Can we do it?
Can you send them a 1099C?
Actually, can we send a door knocker? And ask them to cooperate with us, basically, and we will not send 1099.
Well, typically a door knocker.
That opportunity has come and gone.
Yeah.
I think if you would have gotten them to deed it to you prior to foreclosure, you could have accepted the property for their cost basis in it, and it wouldn't have tripped a forgiveness of debt, which is the 1099C. I think right now you're basically doing something that's on the edge of what's called abuse of the civil process if you do it. Meaning, I'm not going to punish you with a 1099 forgiveness of debt if you're willing to do it. It's a good question. I just would make, you know, I don't quite know how you do it and, like, legitimately can say, well, we're willing to accept the property from you and accept your whatever your basis is in the property at this point. Just because the title's now in your name.
So, basically, we want to offer to leave the house in the broom sweep condition, with all the appliances in present and trash removed from the property. And in this case, we can...
Let me explain it to you like this, okay? I live in Texas, okay? And I say that because everybody knows when they go to the ranch, we do fun stuff and whatever. So, okay, I can't go up to somebody with a gun in my hand, okay, and say, let me tell you something. If you do this, this, and this, I'm not going to shoot holes in your door. Okay? I'm threatening them. I can't do that. I don't know how you could do this at this point. Prior to the foreclosure, you could have done it. But right now, I don't know how you can do it and it not be considered a threat. You're basically saying, if you don't do this, we're going to give you a 1099 and you're going to have a tax problem with Uncle Sam. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know how you could do it now and not have an issue with that. Do you, Charles?
I don't. because the foreclosure is completed now. So if they're actually still in the property, they would take that as a threat if you had somebody go up on their door and knock on the door.
Well, if they wanted to go kick back and, you know, really get over it, then, you know, their attorney's going to argue. They basically threaten my client, you know, blackmail.
Right.
Okay, Eddie, do you mind to read my partner question again? Because somehow I didn't explain it correctly, and Roman keeps sending me messages that I didn't give the whole scenario correctly.
About the 1099?
Okay. Sorry. Hello?
Hello.
Okay. We got you. Okay, are you just asking, do you 1099 them for forgiveness of debt?
Yeah, I think I misunderstood my partner. We're okay.
Okay.
So the door knockers, they can't negotiate anything.
Well, they can, but you got to. I mean, I'm saying to you that I'm asking you, how are you going to negotiate this and not threaten them? Listen, if let's just play what if for 1 second, okay? If you send a door knocker out before the foreclosure was done, and you said, management has authorized me to say, if you deed the property over to us before it's foreclosed on, then they are willing to accept the property at your cost basis, which would not trigger any forgiveness of debt. If you didn't do that, the possibility could be that if we end up selling it at the courthouse steps for less than what you owe, it could trigger some ordinary income. You see, the way I said that is not threatening. You see what I'm saying? I didn't say, if you don't do this, then I'm going to send you a 1099. That's threatening. That's the way these attorneys have explained it to me. So now it's like, I don't know what you could agree not to do and it not look like, well, basically you're just saying, if I don't cooperate with you, you're going to oppress me with this tax consequence. And that is abuse of the civil process.
Okay, and again, the question about 1099, under what circumstances do we file the form 1099-C? It's about IRS question form 1099-C. Under what circumstances we file the form? Is it optional or it's necessary? If we do not file, will it reflect on the gain loss tax that our LLC need to pay?
Well, it's optional. You don't. I mean, it's not a mandatory that you file a 1099-C. Forgiveness of debt. So when was the property foreclosed? This year?
Yeah, just a few days ago on the February 29th, 28th.
Okay. So the 1099. So you and you might want to confirm this with your CPA or your person that does your taxes, but that will need, if you're going to file it, you'll have to file that this year at the end of the year. Isn't that correct, Eddie?
Yeah, you're not going to get any tax benefit from 1099 and them. Listen, Mangan and I are not attorneys and we're not accountants, so we're just giving you a layman's opinion. It's not a competent professional opinion. We're not accountants, okay?
Okay, got it.
The disclaimer there. But I've never heard of it. I mean, hell, if I could do that, we'd do all kind of stuff with 1099-Cs. 1099-C is basically where you borrow money and you don't pay it back, and the government looks at it, the IRS looks at it and says, well, basically, you know, you got the benefit of income and didn't pay tax on it. In other words, my brother could have me sign a note for $1 million and give me $1 million, and I mysteriously default on the note. And all of a sudden, the IRS goes, well, crap, His brother gave him $1 million, and he didn't pay tax on it. You see what I'm saying? That's where the whole forgiveness of debt came in at. That's what the whole 1099C is about. So the short answer is, and, you know, it's not in our business, it's not like super common people send out 1099Cs. Is that a fair statement, Charles?
Yeah, that's fair.
So basically, it's totally optional if we need to file 1099C or we don't.
Right. It's not mandatory that you do that.
That is our interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Now, the borrower, Eddie, is correct, though. If they get a 1099C, they have to report that to the IRS.
Well, you're sent the IRS.
Right. It goes to the IRS. So the borrower has got to file that forgiveness of debt. So it's not going to affect you, but it could affect them.
Listen, it's a good consideration to get somebody to get deed a house to you if you say it in the proper manner that is not threatening them. If you say, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this, that's a problem. If you say, we're willing to accept a deed, and the good thing about it is there's no chance that it could trigger a forgiveness of debt, which would be 1099 income to you. That's not threatening. That's what I've been told.
Okay. That's very good information.
All right. Yeah, I don't, Jason, I'm hearing what you're saying, brother, but it's all about your cost basis. It's not the amount that's owed, it's your cost basis and the asset that you can't deduct money that isn't paid to you that exceeds your cost basis. So, it's a good question. Great question. In fact, when you guys come to Summer Summit, we're going to do some drill down on all this. All right, what's next here?
All right, so Albert, or Al, sent in a question, and he was wanting to get a little bit of information on it. He is has an infected tooth, and so he's on antibiotics, so he's going to listen back to this if he couldn't get on the call today. So he was wanting us to kind of run through it, and I told him I'd read through it, and because he's pretty much explained out his questions fairly well.
Okay.
On his questions. So he bought a non-performer in 2015, and it was boarded with Peak for workouts. They attempted to find the bar with a skip search with the Social Security number, and it shows that the borrower had died in 2009. Of course, that wasn't in the due diligence files, but he's physically gone to the property and is doing so. It was able to engage the mailman in a brief conversation, and he pointed that someone is actually picking up the property, the mail from time to time, so it's not just staying there. Which he's trying to figure out, that may mean somebody's there occupying it part time, or just maybe coming by and picking up the mail for the deceased. There have been some undelivered breach of letters. So when he did his demand letter, I'm guessing it came back undelivered. And he's wondering if he is free to move forward. The two questions, question is, will resolution require two separate legal processes? He's expected to meet with an attorney that wants to know the process so that he can get the best use of the time when speaking to the attorney. And so, first off, is how does he identify the executor of Dorothy Watkins' estate? And is there a way to minimize the cost and time and coordinated effort to complete whatever is required as far as a probate or foreclosure on a on an estate. And the third is what might be expected in additional cost in handling both probate and foreclosure, and how does that work?
Is this in New Jersey or New York?
I can look at the, let me look at the file report.
I don't think it is, Eddie.
It's actually, it is in New York, yes. It is in Elmira, New York.
All right. Well, Charles, I'm going to let you do the drill down. Let me kind of address the first thing. Alan Friedman is an attorney that we found that we think understands our business, okay? So we go to trade shows, and we see these attorneys and stuff, and some of them we just kind of roll our eyes, and some of them we sharp guys that really get it. And I think we have a good feeling about Adam. Adam, is that a fair statement, Charles?
Yeah. I mean, Adam's going to be probably the best, especially for New York. Adam's a great attorney. And so if anybody's going to know the process, it's definitely going to be Adam.
Adam has told us that outside of New York City and the boroughs, that the foreclosure process in other parts of New York can be escalated far differently than it was before. Okay? Now, Charles, have we heard anything contrary to that?
I have not. And typically when we push that back to an attorney that maybe a third-party servicer is using and, you know, they push it back, then they usually come back and say, well, you know, in the best-case scenario, we can do it this. So typically attorneys will give you the worst case scenario and they'll drag it out. But we know Adam's moved through foreclosures for us. I mean, he's very efficient and he's pretty quick to get something pushed through a foreclosure. I mean, if there's a probate filed, it's going to be a public record. So if they filed a probate for Dorothea Watkins, the state, then that should be public record. And that would be picked up on title, I would think, unless the abstractor.
I would say they have an initiated probate. That's what that'd be my guess, is they have not initiated probate.
No.
So you don't know who if they haven't filed with the court to initiate the probate process, and there's nothing of record that says who the executor or the will is.
Well, it's not. I mean, he can go ahead and he can proceed with a foreclosure. If it doesn't pull up on the title, and I mean, if somebody just told him Dorothea died, you know what? His kids may have walked away and are still picking up mail. It may have been somebody just living in that house before that's picking up their mail. We don't know who was living in the house. But if it's not filed a public record and that there's a probate, Adam can move forward with the foreclosure.
Yeah, so what we're saying is, Albert, in most states, there is not necessarily a big, expensive, lengthy process on foreclosing on a dead person. Now, that's not true, ironically, in Texas, where it's so easy to foreclose on somebody otherwise. But generally speaking, we don't hear that in other states, do we, Charles? Am I saying that correct?
Yeah, Texas is a little bit different, but yeah, we don't hear that anywhere else.
Yeah.
But again, it's, you know, when you start a foreclosure, if the servicer hadn't been able to make contact with the borrowers and there's nothing filed, a public record that there was a probate or anything ever probated, I mean, it was ever probated, I would proceed with the foreclosure. And I have. I mean, I foreclosed on properties that, you know, that the borrower was deceased and nobody ever came forward and filed a probate on it.
Yeah. A last will and testament is a private document until it goes to the court system. So, and a lot of people settling the estate never probate. They just use basically an heirship affidavit for everybody to sign off on whatever it is the remaining assets of the estate is. And they don't go through the court process because the court process for a probate is expensive and timely, and it's a pain in the butt. I bought
Very.
1,000 notes from estates with all of the heirs signed an heirship affidavit. All of the heirs, and normally it's two disinterested parties that have known the family for a long time. And so those documents, those notes never went through probate.
So, Albert, I would push forward with your foreclosure with Adam.
Yeah. And by the way, because it's state-specific, they've lit up the board with all these questions about what if, what if, what if. Bottom line is just ask the attorney. I mean, we could give ourselves brain damage trying to figure out what the process is. Well, until you find out, well, it's upstate New York and here's what the court requires, then deal with it. Otherwise, going and figuring out whether the guy's dead or not, to some degree, is kind of irrelevant. Right, Charles?
Right.
Or what, you know. Sounds like the guy's dead, but, you know, and the attorney, you need to tell the attorney that. But once you know that, he can say, well, there is an additional process, or we're just going to give notice and we're going to roll on. Finding the guy's heirs from his will is going to not be easy to do.
Yeah, Matt just pulled that up there.
Yeah. All right. What else?
All right. Did you have you checked the board down through there to make sure everything's kind of covered in?
No, it's all smart questions. I mean, they're like what is, or we do this, and it's like it's smart stuff. It's just, you know, I don't know. Ask the attorney.
Yeah. All right. We do. So Mike has one question. So let me grab him real quick. And then that is, I believe, all that we have for today. So hopefully. Mike?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Hey, just had a quick question about IRS liens on non-performing notes. It's a friend of mine has they were owner founding some property and the borrower defaulted and they just got a deed in lieu from him. And before they were able to record the deed in lieu, the IRS placed a lien on the property in an amount far exceeding the value of the property. And I was just wondering how easy it was to get that lien removed, or is that something that's not an option?
No, it's an option. He's just going to have to notify the IRS that he has taken his property, and, I mean, he will need his – I mean, let him know he took it by deed in lieu, and they need to get this – if they can get the lien released. Typically, it's just a process of notifying the IRS.
Okay, yeah, because I know you guys aren't really too worried about IRS liens, and typically it's just a matter of filling out a form and contacting somebody, and it's not usually an issue.
Yeah.
Let me clarify this, okay? If you had a house that you had a lien on and it was worth $100,000 and you had a $20,000 first lien and a guy jumps up and gets an IRS lien, okay? The IRS is not going to be so quick to release that because there's $80,000 equity in the deal, the scenario I just described, and they see that as a way to get their money. Okay?
Okay.
The reality is you have a house that's a lien on a house that's $100,000 and you're owed $110,000. You send that to the IRS and lay that out to them. They got no equity. They released the lien against the house. They're not releasing the IRS lien. They're releasing it as a lien against that specific property.
Okay. Okay?
That's what Charles is talking about.
Because when they say there's no equity, there's no sense. I mean, they're not going to pursue anything.
Right.
They're just looking for the equity.
Yeah. In fact, okay. Jason put some good stuff on the chat board about, you know, telling you, laying it out. So it's really good. Yep. Very cool.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We need to put that on the website there. That is some good information right there.
Yeah, Kevin does all that stuff. I think it's already up. Let's confirm it, but I know Kevin does cover all that stuff.
Okay.
It's a great question.
Very good question.
I will send this over to him after the call and just ask him about that and see if he's put it up there. So, and confirm that. So. All right. So.
Jackie's asking about a skip trace vendor. You want to hear my 2 cents worth on that, Charlesy?
I'm going to hear it anyways. Go ahead and tell me.
Terrible.
I'm going to hear it anyway. Terrible. Go ahead and tell me.
There's not a servicer alive that's got a skip trace company that's worth a crap.
Jackie.
My students can find people that have disappeared. Skip trace companies can't.
Skip trace companies may not always be the most effective way to find a borrower. I will say that. I've ordered many a skip tracers through my servicers, and they never, you know, they haven't located. On occasion, they locate them. I have had some that they're located, but my biggest experience with skip tracers is we don't get a lot of contacts. We don't locate a lot of people.
Listen, a private detective for about $200 can find somebody if they've gone to the moon. Okay? So you get on social media and see if you can find them. Facebook, LinkedIn, all that kind of stuff, right? Do all that cheap stuff that you can do. And otherwise, you know, you can find a private detective and they can find somebody. They got databases and they just know how to do it. You know, skip trace companies basically take their credit report. This isn't all they do, but this is kind of what they do. They run a credit report and they see if the guy's moved. And then they got some process and they call a couple of creditors that appear to be chasing somebody and they see if they have a better address for them. But I'm just saying, I've sat in so many meetings where, servicer ordered a skip trace and they were unable to find them. I'm finally like, quit wasting the money. But our students find people. They seem to be more motivated than the skip trace companies. It's a great question, Jackie. All right, Charles, we're about ready to wrap this up. What else we got, Maddie?
Hey, Charles, when's our next titanium coming out?
We've got a titanium coming out Thursday evening, so we will send everybody a notice once the titanium's released. So it goes out Thursday to the titanium students, and it'll go out to everyone else the following Tuesday. So everybody get ready. We're finishing it up, and we'll have a big release on Thursday.
Very good. All right, Mr. Matt. Can you make that bigger?
More bigger?
More bigger. More bigger.
But I could see that, Eddie.
Just saying. You're not as old as I am, Megan.
No, not by much.
All right. We have a Titanium Mastermind coming up. And you can go to the website. We are going to have an email going out next week. But you can go to the website, noteschool.com/titanium, and it'll have the brief information. So you're going to arrive on. You got to handle your taxes before you come to this event, okay? So everybody knows it. We did it tax weekend because we know every titanium student we've got is going to file an extension, and you can do that on Wednesday before you leave. So. File your extension as Eddie Speed is, okay? File your extension and then come to Texas for the Titanium event. So we're gonna have a little social evening on the 14th on the 15th and the 16th, we are going to have the Titanium Mastermind. Listen, look at that, an ice cream social. Isn't that something? Then we're going to have a cookout on, I believe that's Friday the 15th. The 16th, we are going to go watch the Texas Rangers and the Baltimore Orioles. That's a baseball team, Mangan.
It is. Right here in Texas, Eddie.
All right, so we're gonna go to the Rangers Stadium, have some fun. This is, if you're a Titanium, this is going to be very good. We're going to be sending out a lot of information. Just want to make sure you get it on your calendar. And good stuff. Summer Summit. Summer Summit is going to be June 10th and 11th. Okay? So on June the 9th, we're going to have a non-mentor class, but we're only going to invite the mentor students. And this is because we had a lot of students that said, I saw what you guys do at the Child Welfare Board and the contribution. I just need to make something a little more affordable. And so we wanted to, like, have something that's really like a crazy good buy that you would want to participate in, and all the money's going to go to the Child Welfare Board. Okay? So I'm in negotiations with a speaker. I don't want to say it yet. I have a couple of different guys that have been recommended to me by Jeff Watson that are really good, that are going to have some really good, timely, very meaningful topics, different than what we generally discuss. Okay? So they're going to do a special class. All proceeds go to the Child Welfare Board on June 9th. And then Mr. Finolio is going to take everybody on the buses to the stockyards. And he's going to treat you to dinner. Now, I'm not saying the Child Welfare Board is going to pay for the dinner. I'm not saying, but I'm saying that that's a crazy good deal. It's $250 for the primary and $200 for a guest, and you know what it takes to get on the bus and have the, he'll take you to a nice meal and stuff. So this will be a great deal for any, we're going to offer this to mentor students, anybody wants to participate. That will be on June the 9th. So we'll have more information about that. You can put it on your calendar. Then we're having Summer Summit on June 10th and 11th. Okay? And that'll be in Texas, be right here in Dallas. That's where you're coming. Susan is waiting to ink the deal with the hotel. We'll have the information on this probably out next week. And but we've made the deal with them. And so you're going to come to Dallas Fort Worth. Those of you that bought the dinner at the Speed's house, that is going to be on Saturday evening, June the 11th, and we will get you to our house from the facility, okay? And then we are concluding day 3 of a Rich Rewards class on Sunday, and that'll be June the 12th, okay? So, that's what we got. Anything else, Matt? Oh, okay, so we're not going to send this out to everybody. If you want an invitation to this, you can email, who are they going to email, Matt? How are we going to make this easy to do?
I mean, they can always you want them to email me, or
you can have them email you, and you'll kind of sort the list for us, okay?
Okay.
If you've been to the Hog Hunt or you've been to Martha's stuff, we think you're going to be on the list. But if you absolutely want to make sure, we're going to have a webinar next week about the hog hunt. Now, if you're a lady, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, we probably haven't sent you an invitation. We're not going to send you an invitation. Okay? You can come, and you can hunt. We just made that. So we're not going to invite the whole list. But if you want to make sure that you're on the hog hunt invite list for the webinar so that we can tell you the details about it, we're gonna have that webinar next week. Okay? You can email for either one of these webinars, you can email matt@noteschool.com and he'll make sure it gets to the right place. Okay? These are non-mentor events, meaning that one of them is all the money goes to the Child Welfare Board, which is the hog hunt. The second one is Martha's Mastermind, and that's really how we help support some of these events. So we take the money to help support the facilities so that we can have these events. So Martha's Ladies Mastermind is not part of the mentor program. Neither is the hog hunt. Okay? Usually there are mentor students that participate in them, but they know that's separate and apart from the deliverable from the mentoring. Martha is going to have her mastermind at the end of April, and she is going to have a webinar, and it probably will be close to next week. So once again, if you are interested in either one of these webinars to learn the details, you're not committing, you're just saying I want to hear the story, and we'll give you some direct things to show you how to sign up as part of the webinar. You won't be committed to, but we'll show if you're ready to sign up, we're going to show you how to do it. Email matt@noteschool.com, and then he'll get it to the right folks. As Forrest Gump said, Matt, that's all I got to say about that.
All right. And the other thing is that within the next couple of weeks, we are going to have Pro Title on both probably the performing and non-performing. They'll be in staggered weeks, but Pro Title will be on our webinars in the next. I know you had talked about them earlier in the webinar, so yeah. Just be mindful. They are going to be on, so have your questions ready, and they're going to go over that. That survey that we filled out a couple of weeks back, they're actually taking their information from that as to what y'all wanted to learn about and going to put together some content for that. So,
okay. All right. You got Winberries. You got somebody else that wants to come to the hog hunt? Absolutely. We'd love to have them. You guys know the hog hunt's fun deal. You know, so that's not a mentor student only event. Neither is really Martha's Mastermind, but we always invite you guys first because they usually fill up, and we always do it. But Winberries, if you guys have got somebody, then on the hog hunt, then make sure Matt has them on the list so that we can send them the webinar and tell them the details. Okay, that's beautiful. All right, good call. Sorry, ran a bit long. Good content today. We will catch you later. Kevin will see you tomorrow on the webinar. See you later.
Thanks, everybody.